Okay, let's get into the specifics. We know the racial demographics of the psychology field are still pretty skewed. The American Psychological Association reported that 83% of psychologists in the U.S. were white as of 2022.
Right. If we zoom out
Yeah.
and look at the bigger picture, that statistic means there's a very high chance that supervisees from marginalized backgrounds, especially BIPOC supervisees,
Are going to be working
with
with
white supervisors. And
exes
that makes
then.
understanding the dynamics
Yeah.
of cross-racial supervision absolutely essential. Okay, so this research uses the Multicultural Orientation Framework, or MCO. To examine these dynamics, it's got three core pillars: cultural humility, cultural opportunities, and cultural comfort. We'll be zeroing in on cultural humility and cultural comfort. For our deep dive, can you tell us why those two are the focus?
Sure. So, cultural humility and comfort, they're all about the therapist's inner landscape, their personal characteristics and how those might influence what happens in supervision. Cultural opportunities, on the other hand, are more
Which I'm
about
glad.
supervisors' actions and behaviors.
Got it. So, how do researchers define cultural humility and cultural comfort in this context?
Yes,
I mean,
sir.
pretty big concepts.
You're right, they are. And it's important to have clear definitions. So, cultural humility is essentially the ability to approach someone else's cultural identity and experiences with an open mind and a willingness to learn from them. It's about recognizing that you don't have all the answers and that your perspective is just one piece of the puzzle.
So it's kind of
Good
like
crochet.
approaching the supervisory relationship with a
Yeah.
beginner's mind, always open to being surprised and
Yeah,
challenged.
exactly. Cultural comfort is more about how a therapist responds emotionally to cultural differences, both with their clients and in the supervisory relationship. It suggests a certain level of maturity in handling those dynamics.
Okay, so it's not just about
Thanks, Chris.
understanding different cultures
Yeah.
intellectually, but also about being comfortable and confident,
Yeah.
navigating those differences
Yeah.
in a way that's sensitive and respectful.
Precisely. And this study really digs into how these two qualities, cultural humility and cultural comfort, actually play out in real-life supervision experiences.
Okay, so tell me about the study itself. What did they talk to?
So, the researchers surveyed 116 BIPOC psychotherapy trainees who are currently being supervised by a white supervisor. These trainees were in a mix of programs like PhD, Society, MS, MSW, and NFT programs, so they had a pretty good representation of folks across the field.
Interesting. And what do they find out about these supervisees' experiences?
Yeah.
Did cultural humility and comfort
Yeah.
actually make a difference?
Yeah. So, here's where it gets really interesting. The supervisees who perceive their supervisors as being high in cultural humility and comfort reported significantly higher levels of satisfaction with their supervision experience.
Okay, that makes sense. If you feel like your supervisor respects and values your cultural background, it's
Yeah.
probably going to create a more positive learning environment.
Exactly. And not only were they more satisfied, but they also reported feeling a stronger supervisory working alliance, that sense of shared purpose and a genuine connection with their supervisor.
Oh, okay. So it's not just about getting along. It's about feeling like
Yeah.
you're in this together, working towards a common goal.
Right. And remember, research has shown that a strong working alliance in supervision can lead to all sorts of
For the
benefits. The
school.
supervisee, increased self-efficacy, which is basically their belief in their own abilities, and even a stronger therapeutic alliance with their own client.
Wow. So it's like a chain reaction. A positive supervisory relationship can actually make therapists more effective in their work with clients.
Exactly. And one of the most compelling findings was that cultural humility, in particular, was linked to supervisees feeling more comfortable opening up and sharing important information in supervision.
And that's a big deal. Imagine trying to learn and grow as a therapist if you don't feel safe sharing your experiences,
Yeah.
especially those related to culture and identity.
Absolutely. If a supervisee is holding back, they're missing out on crucial feedback and guidance. And in a field as sensitive and personal as therapy, that lack of openness can have a ripple effect, potentially impacting the care they're able to provide to their clients.
Even if you aren't a therapist
Yeah.
or in training, why should you care about these findings? It seems like this research has implications for anyone who's ever been
Yeah.
in a mentoring or teaching relationship.
You're absolutely right. These findings highlight the importance of cultural humility in any relationship where one person is in a position of power or authority, whether it's a teacher, a coach, a manager, or even a parent, the ability to recognize and respect the cultural background of the people you're working with is essential for fostering trust, open communication, and ultimately, successful outcomes.
That's a good point. It makes you wonder, how many missed opportunities for learning and growth have happened? Because someone in a position of authority lacked cultural humility.
I think that's a question worth pondering. And it's not just about an individual relationships either. If we look at the bigger picture, a lack of cultural humility in fields like psychology can perpetuate existing disparities in access to quality mental health care.
That's a powerful point. It's not just about feeling good. It's about addressing systemic inequities and ensuring that everyone has access to the support they need. And two, while this research offers some valuable insights, it's important to acknowledge its limitations. This study was based on a single snapshot in time, a one-time survey. It would be fascinating to see how these dynamics play out over time in the supervisory relationship.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we need more research that looks at the long-term impact of cultural humility and supervision.
Yeah, for sure. And another limitation is that the study focused specifically on BIPOC supervisees with white supervisors. Future research should explore how cultural humility functions in other supervisory diets.
To get a more complete understanding.
Okay. So even with those limitations, this research gives us a lot to chew on. But let's move from theory to practice, what can actually be done to promote cultural humility in clinical supervision. Where to even begin?
Well, that's $1 million question, isn't it?
It is. It is.
How do we actually put, you know, cultural humility into practice, especially in something as complex as clinical supervision?
Yeah. So the article offers some great concrete recommendations. For both supervisors and training programs, what really stood out to me is that for supervisors, it goes way beyond just attending. A multicultural competency training is about a much deeper level of self-reflection.
So not just checking a box, but actually doing the inner work. I'm curious, what does that kind of self-reflection look like in practice?
Well, it's about asking yourself some tough questions, like why? Why do I feel uncomfortable when a supervisee brings up race or culture? What are my own cultural discomforts and assumptions? We all have them. It's about being honest with ourselves about what they are.
Because if we're not aware of our own biases, we can't address them. And that can create all sorts of problems.
On the supervisory relationship.
Exactly. It can make supervisees feel like they have to walk on eggshells or censor themselves. And that defeats the whole purpose of supervision, which is to
provide a safe space for learning and growth.
Right. I'm starting to realize that cultural humility is really about creating that safety and trust.
You're spot on.
Yeah.
And that means supervisors need to create opportunities for ongoing learning and feedback, not just about clinical skills, but about cultural dynamics too. The article suggests things like forming consultation groups with trusted colleagues.
Okay, so finding a space where you can safely unpack these complex issues, maybe even role play, challenging scenarios, and get honest feedback without feeling judged.
Exactly. And it's essential for supervisors to proactively seek out feedback from their supervisees, even anonymously.
Oh, that's interesting. Why anonymous?
Because it can help create a sense of safety for supervisees to share their honest perspectives without fear of repercussions.
That makes a lot of sense. Power dynamics are always at play in supervision, so it's crucial to level the playing field as much as possible.
Absolutely. Yeah. And here's the thing. A truly culturally humble supervisor will actually pay close attention to how they react to that feedback, especially if it's critical.
Right.
Do they get defensive or do they use it as an opportunity for growth?
Wow. That's a really powerful point. It's like your reaction to feedback is a measure of your cultural humility in itself.
Precisely. The article also encourages supervisors to notice any patterns in who approaches them. For supervision, for example, do BIPOC or other underrepresented supervisees tend to avoid working with them?
Those patterns can be so revealing, can't they? It forces you to confront the possibility that you might be perceived as unapproachable or even intimidating, especially to supervisees from certain backgrounds.
Exactly. And it's not enough to just say, well, I'm not racist, so it can't be me. It's about actively working towards being anti-racist.
Which requires a much deeper level of awareness and commitment.
You're right. It's not a passive state of being. It's an active and ongoing process of challenging systems of oppression and working to dismantle them. And that starts with being willing to examine our own biases, even the ones we're not aware of.
Absolutely. We all have blind spots. And the only way to address them is to be open to having them pointed out, even if it's uncomfortable. That's the heart of cultural humility. It's about recognizing that we're all on a journey of learning and unlearning. None of us have arrived.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
No.
Now, while a lot of the responsibility falls on the supervisor, training programs have a big role to play in fostering cultural humility today.
Okay, so it's not just about individual effort. It's about creating systemic change within the institutions. That trained therapists, that makes sense. What are some of the things programs can do to support this?
For starters, they need to go beyond just offering a one-time workshop on multicultural competency. These concepts need to be integrated throughout the entire curriculum.
Okay, so weaving cultural humility and anti-racism into every aspect of the training, not treating it as an add-on.
Or a separate module. And it's theoretical knowledge either. Programs need to create opportunities for students to practice applying these concepts in real-world settings.
Giving them hands-on experience, navigating these complexities
right.
before they're out in the field
yeah.
on their own. What kind of opportunities could that involve?
There are a lot of creative ways to do this they could incorporate. Role-playing exercises, case discussions that specifically center on cultural dynamics, and even live supervision with feedback from seasoned supervisors who are skilled in providing culturally responsive supervision.
That sounds incredibly valuable. And beyond the curriculum itself, what else can training programs do to create a more culturally humble environment?
They need to cultivate a culture that truly values and celebrates diversity in all its forms. That means ensuring the faculty and staff reflect the diversity of the communities they serve. And it also means fostering a climate where all students feel a sense of belonging and inclusion, regardless of their background.
Yeah, because if students don't feel safe and respected within their training program, how can they be expected to create that kind of environment?
For their future clients.
Exactly. It's not enough to just talk the talk. They have to walk the walk. That means having clear policies and procedures.
Yes, so really.
For addressing any instances.
Of bias or discrimination.
Right. You're right. It's about creating a zero tolerance policy for anything that undermines the principles of equity and inclusion. But let's be honest, even with the best intentions, these conversations about culture and power can get really messy and uncomfortable. How do we navigate that discomfort productively?
That's such an important point. Discomfort is inevitable, but it's also an opportunity for growth. It's about leaning into that discomfort, not shying away from it. And remember, it's not about being perfect. It's about being willing to mess up, to apologize, and to learn from our mistakes.
Yeah. I think that's a message we all need to hear. We're all human.
Yeah.
And we're all going to make mistakes. It's how we respond to those mistakes. That matters.
Absolutely. And that's where self-compassion comes in. We have to be kind to ourselves as we're on this journey of learning and unlearning.
That's such a good reminder. We can't expect to get it right all the time, but we can commit to doing the work and showing up with humility and an open heart. Okay, so we've dug deep into cultural humility and clinical supervision, the why, the how, and the potential impact. But as we wrap up this deep dive, let's shift gears a bit. How does all of this apply to you, even if you're not a therapist or in training?
You know, it's easy to think of cultural humility as something that's only relevant in specific professions, but honestly, it's a powerful skill set and mindset that can benefit anyone in any context.
I'm really intrigued by that. So how can we take those principles of cultural humility that we've been talking about and apply them to our everyday lives? What does that look like?
Well, it all starts with recognizing that each of us carries biases and assumptions that are shaped by our unique experiences and backgrounds, our cultures, and those biases, often unconscious, can influence how we interact with others, especially those who are different from us.
Right. So step one is acknowledging that we don't have all the answers and that our perspective is just one among many.
Exactly. It's about approaching every interaction with a sense of genuine curiosity and openness. Rather than jumping to judgments, it's about being willing to listen deeply and learn from others, even when their experiences challenge our own closely held beliefs.
That reminds me of something we talked about earlier, the importance of being aware of power dynamics in any relationship.
That's such a crucial point, recognizing those power imbalances, whether subtle or obvious, and understanding how they might impact. Communication and understanding is key to practicing cultural humility. It's about leveling the playing field as much as possible.
Yeah. I'm starting to see how this goes way beyond just being nice to people. It's about actively creating a space.
Right.
Where everyone feels seen and heard.
You're right. It's about creating a space where those power dynamics don't shut down communication or make people feel unsafe to share their authentic selves.
So, where's some practical, down-to-earth tips for cultivating cultural humility in our daily lives?
One of the simplest but most powerful practices is to ask questions instead of making assumptions. When you encounter someone from a distant background, don't automatically think you know what their experiences are like. Instead, ask open-ended questions and genuinely listen to their responses.
Right. It's about replacing that knee-jerk reaction to judge or categorize.
Yeah.
With a genuine desire to understand.
Precisely. And remember, it's okay to be wrong. In fact, being willing to admit when you don't know something or when your understanding is limited is a sign of strength, not weakness. It shows that you're committed to learning and growing.
Embrace those aha moments.
Yeah.
When you realize your assumptions were off base.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Another important tip is to actively seek out diverse perspectives. Read books, watch movies, listen to podcasts that expose you to different cultures and viewpoints. Surround yourself with people from different backgrounds and lived experiences.
Yeah.
You know, make that conscious effort to expand your world.
Right. It's like intentionally bursting that bubble we can sometimes get stuck in.
Where everyone looks and thinks like us. Exactly. And here's a challenge for you and our listeners. Don't shy away from uncomfortable conversations. If you witness someone saying or doing something that feels biased or discriminatory, speak up. It might be awkward, but it's important to challenge those behaviors and create a more inclusive environment.
Yeah, that can be so hard to do. But you're right, silence is often interpreted as agreement.
And if you're on the receiving end
of
that feedback, try to listen. Without getting defensive, remember, it's not about being attacked, it's about learning and growing.
It's about understanding
that
we all have blind spots
and
that we can all benefit from feedback, even when it stings a little.
Exactly. That's the beauty of being human. We're always evolving, always learning.
This has been such an insightful conversation. I feel like I've got a whole new toolkit for approaching not just my professional life, but my personal interactions as well.
I'm so glad to hear that. It's been a pleasure diving deep into this topic with you. And remember, cultural humility is not just a buzzword or a trend. It's a way of being in the world that benefits everyone. It's about approaching each other with respect, openness, and a genuine willingness to learn from our differences.
Beautifully put. And for our listeners, we hope you'll continue to explore the concept of cultural humility in your own lives and see where it takes you. Until next time, keep diving deep.